Hi, and welcome back to another episode of Unicorns Do Exist. I am Vanessa, your host, and today I wanted to talk about a subject that is very dear to my heart because of how I've had to overcome it, not once, twice, but continuously. That is mental health. Mental health, especially in our youth, I feel like it's more and more common. Even though we have a lot more resources and so many people continue to speak up about it and share their experiences with mental health and how you can overcome it, there's still some that want to use it against you, or some people that feel embarrassed, especially in the Hispanic community. I myself dealt with it at a very young age. I feel like my father had some sort of mental health issues that he never got a chance to overcome or discuss or open up about because of his culture, how it is, and how Hispanics don't believe in it. I think alcoholism was his way of coping. And the answer, obviously, my dad passed away in 2021 of alcoholism. I also suffered with alcohol at a young age. I grew up here and in Mexico, I would say, in both places. At a very young age, we would spend a lot of time, mostly all our summers in Mexico, and drinking in Mexico was allowed at any age back in the day. So I remember my first drink was probably at 11 years old with my cousins at a party, at a wedding, at some social event. My parents were drinking. I was snuck away with my cousins and I started drinking. And tequila in Mexico is a lot better quality. So you don't get drunk as easy. You start to believe that you can handle your liquor like an adult. And that is not true. At the same time, growing up with parents that drink, it's not so tabooed to try this beer, try that beer, try this wine, try this drink around dinner. But as you get older, if you continue to have these undiagnosed mental health issues or don't talk about them and start to mix alcohol, it's not a very good combination. I think we've seen it time and time again. But here to talk about my experience with it, I grew up in a family where alcohol was the norm. It was our coping mechanism, my father's and my mother's. So when I started to suffer from anxiety or start to feel an anxiety attack coming, my mom would rather me drink a beer than drink medication. I mean, I was drunk. I think a lot of people in my quinceañera were drunk. Nothing like the quinceañeras nowadays, which I'm very grateful for. I was drunk. My sister quinceañera, one of her friends was trash dancing in the tables. My other sister's quinceañera, I believe some of the mamas were also drunk. And like I said, they don't make them like us anymore, you know? Thank God. These girls are now doing amazing. Anyway, that's not the point. But yes, I have three sisters. We all had quinceañeras, and all three of us were drinking at our quinceañera. That was not frowned upon. It was not like we were hiding it from my parents. It was completely fine with my parents. Fast forward to I get diagnosed with borderline personality disorder. By this time, I'm 23 years old. I came out to my parents right after high school. We'll do a little bit of the coming out story too. So when I first came out, I was 19. I was working at Starbucks and I met a girl there who I started to like. She was my first girlfriend ever. My dad caught me hugging her in a not very friend type of way. So I told him he did not approve. Thought I was going to get over it. It was a phase. Actually, it was really cute. I remember I was in my room with her. We were just laying there talking or something. My dad walks by. And then he says, Vanessa, get over here. His voice is very, very strong. And he takes me to the backyard and he's like, ¿Qué pendejadas son esas? Which is like, what the fuck is that? And I'm like, what do you mean? Pretending like I didn't know what he's talking about. He's like, what's going on in there? And I was like, oh, well, it's this girl and I think I like her. And he's like, what do you mean? Like, I like her. Like, I like her. Like, you know, like I'm like, I like boy. But I don't like boys. I like her. And he just looks at me and he's like, but no estás fea? And I was like, what? He's like, tú puedes agarrar un novio si quieres. Which also translates into, you're not that ugly. And I was like, what do you mean? What does that have to do with anything? He's just like, he looks at me like very serious, very like, you're not that ugly. You can get a boyfriend if you want. And I was like, think. But the want part is what's missing. And he's like, no vas a ser marimacha, sí. Meaning like, you're not going to be butch. And I was like, no, I love being a girl. I like being a girl. The only thing is I like girls. And in his mind, the only lesbians he ever encountered growing up were the very, very manly butch women. And so that was his biggest concern, that I was going to end up like that. And then he said, "You're not ugly. You can definitely find a boyfriend." I said, "Thank you, Dad. But as of now, I don't want one." He didn't give me too much pushback at the time because I was 19 and about to be 20. I think he just thought it was a phase. Like, he really just was like, "Oh, she'll get over it." And so didn't tell my mom. He even said, "Don't tell your mom because your mom's going to have a field day with it." And so I was 19. I kept hanging out with the girl. And eventually I told one of my family members, which was a guy. Okay. So this is how freaking chismosos, I want to say, or like how much men could be worse than women to a certain extent. It's not even about men or women, but men for sure. Anyway, I tell my cousin, he's a guy. I confide in him. At that time, he was my coach. And I was like, "Hey, I think I like this girl. Like, what do you think?" And again, very, very Mexican way of thinking back in the day. Mind you, this was over 15 years ago. Me coming out the first time. He looks at me and he says, "Wait." I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "No, like, I'll get any guy who, because he, this would be saying too much. He works with a lot of other athletes and he was like, "I'll get any of these guys to fuck you. That'll fix you." And he's like, "Really, really? Like, you're a lesbian?" I said, "Yes, really, really." He's like, "All right, cool." He's like, "So you don't want any of these guys?" I said, "No, thank you." And then I finally said, "You know what? How about this? Whichever guy you let them fuck you, I'll take the same one." And he's like, "What? Whichever one you will let them fuck you, I'll let the same one." And he's like, "Well, no, it's not the same. You're a girl." And I was like, "Correct. But just like you don't want it, I don't want that. Simple." He's like, "Well, I don't get it." And I was like, "You're never going to, because you're not gay. It's not up for you to get, to understand." He told his brothers told his mom is my aunt. My mom found out and she kicked me out at the time. It wasn't okay for me. So my mom kicked me out. I moved out. I think I was 19. Finally, the girl, my first girl ever, broke my heart, as they do. And so I was like, might as well go back home. And so I told my mom and my dad that I was like, "Just kidding. It was a phase. I am not gay. Please take me back." Because I was rooming with my ex and another person. And I was like, "Why even be here?" And my dad said, "You know what? If you come home, we'll buy you a car." So I was like, "Okay, sure. I'm straight again for the car and for my parents." During that time, my parents wouldn't let me see my brothers and sisters. So that was really hard on me. We were super close to each other. And so not being able to see them also killed me. So I moved back home at 19. I moved out for 6 months, came back, finally be able to speak to my brothers and sisters. At the time, I had a younger brother and he was like 10. I think he was like 10. So I was really glad to be back home and be able to stay there with them. It wasn't easy because I still had the lesbian label on me. But I went on by saying, you know, I'm not gay. It was a phase. And I'm 19 at the time. I turned 20. I'm still living with my parents. My mom keeps asking, like, "Why don't you have a boyfriend?" I was like, "I don't need a boyfriend. I don't want a boyfriend." She was like, "Are you hanging out with girls again?" I was like, "No, I'm not hanging out with any girls. I just don't want a boyfriend. I'm going to school. I'm working." And I would always say I didn't want kids at that time when I was in my 20s. I would call them. I was very bad at it. I didn't want children. I did not want kids because I always thought, now that I'm older, I understand the concept of why I didn't want kids. I didn't want kids because I thought at that time that having a child meant being with a man, having to get married and having to be with a man. So I would always say I didn't want kids. It didn't dawn on me that buying sperm, IVF, all that stuff was not really heard of back then. So in my mind, having a baby meant being with a man, and I did not want any of that. Now I understand why I was so opposed to children. But at 20, I meet a guy at work, and he's super cool. He's Romanian, and I really love hanging out with him and talking to him. So in my mind, I'm like, perfect. He wants to take me out and date me. My mom's asking why I don't have a boyfriend. This is great. So I start dating my first real boyfriend as an adult. He worked 3 months out of the year. He worked where I worked. Then he would have to leave to Monterey for 3 months and come back. So I was like, oh, easy. I don't have to hang out with him every day. And I was going to school at the same time. I was focused on my family. And so I dated him for quite a while. Eventually, I did have feelings for him. And it was one of my most teaching relationships because I learned so much from him. I love that he was not Hispanic. I love that he was not a typical macho guy. And I love that he respected and valued me and my thoughts, you know, even though he would always joke, like, sometimes you get a pretty one and sometimes you get a smart one. He's like, I got a smart one. But now we just laugh at it because we still talk. He's an amazing man and father. And I am so grateful for him for putting up with me when I was such a kid. We're dating for a year. And things were starting to get a little serious. By then, I started talking to another girl also at work. Since he was gone back and forth, I finally had to come clean and confess that I was still a lesbian. I mean, he had an idea that I was a lesbian because I did say I don't date men. I dated girls, but he still kept talking to me. Dating just a woman was a foreign concept to him as well. So eventually, after a year and some time, he wanted to be a little more serious. I was 21, about to be 22, but finally had the courage to tell my parents again. This time, my brothers and sisters were a little older, a little more understanding. I asked them permission first. I really did. I went up to my sisters because they didn't have a hard time with me being a lesbian. But the younger one, she was too young to understand what was going on. All she saw was that her mother was hurting, and I was hurting her by being a lesbian. So she had a hard time with it. By now, my youngest one is 15, and the other one is in college, and being gay is more heard of here and there. I remember going to my sister's bedroom before her quinceañera, and I asked her, I don't know if you know, but I'm a lesbian. I don't want to tell mom and dad until after your quinceañera because I don't want any problems or anything like that. But I would want to know what you think. Like, would you be okay with me being a lesbian or coming out again? And she looks at me. She's like, oh, yeah, I know you're a lesbian. And she's like, yeah, I'm good with it now. So at 22, I broke up with a guy. And I sat my mom down again, this time with my sisters. And we told her, hey, mom, you know, I've been dating this guy. And I don't want to continue to date this guy because of how I feel. I said, if you want me to stay in the closet and marry this guy, I will because I don't want to hurt you. But just know that that's not what I want. This time around, she took it to me at the time the best way she could have. She didn't kick me out or yell. She just said, well, you're my daughter and I love you for who you are. And I just don't want to see it. I don't want to see the people. I don't want anyone in my house. I said, okay, cool. I will respect your house and I'll respect you. She's like, I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to know about it. Please be discreet. I said, done. But, you know, that was at 22. Finally, 23, I started dating another girl. And once again, everyone starts talking, the family. I move out once again to be with my partner at the time. And it did take my mom about 6 years to come around. But when I was 23 and finally out living on my own, I had a job. Everything was going so well. Like, I was 23 years old. It was my birthday, and my parents had already been divorced. There was a lot of stuff going on in my family. My mom had my youngest brother. He's now 17. My dad and her had split up. Finally, the relationship was very toxic at our house. And I finally am in my own place, and everything's quiet and calm and peaceful. Like, for me, in my apartment, at least. I didn't really know too much of what was going on back home. That night before I turned 23, we went to dinner as a family because we always celebrate our birthdays together. My dad came, and I didn't have a good relationship with him at the time because I was gay and he did not approve. But I remember him saying something like he was going to be okay with it. And I was like, oh, great. You know, thank God. And I've been waiting for the acceptance of my family. That night, something happened. We went back to my dad's house where we had some music, drinking. I was supposed to go with the girl I was dating at the time somewhere to a trip for my birthday, but I never made it back because I was hanging out with my family, which I always chose my family. And she got upset. She got mad at me. And I remember going home and crying. Then I remember waking up crying still. That night, something inside of me broke. I felt it. I felt something was off. And I couldn't put my finger on it. And I started crying, and then the next day I kept crying, and then I couldn't stop crying. I remember feeling so uncomfortable in that apartment. I remember feeling like, okay, I have to go to work. And then I would start crying at work randomly. I was still going to school, community college, and I remember being in class and hearing a lecture, and then out of nowhere, I would start crying. And I couldn't control it, and I couldn't understand it, and I kept going on. Like, some days was worse than others. Some days I had to leave class. Some days I could actually go to class and go to work, and other days I couldn't even leave my house. I remember doing my hair and crying, and me telling myself, Vanessa, why are you crying? Stop being a little crybaby. What's wrong? Nothing's wrong. You have a job. You're going to school. Everything's good. You have your own place. Why are you crying? And I just couldn't find a solution. Finally, it was like months of this going on, and I'm like, maybe I'm depressed. Maybe I need to call someone. I went to the doctor. Nothing was wrong with me. And I remember one day I couldn't stop crying. I would have nightmares in the middle of the night. I would not be able to sleep. I would wake up from these night terrors. And I called my doctor because I couldn't stop crying. I think at the time I was waiting to be seen from a therapist. And the sucky part of this is that you're having a panic attack or a mental breakdown. And they're like, oh, yeah, so we'll see you in a week or we'll see you in 2 weeks. And it's so annoying, heartbreaking, because I see people in the streets and I feel like they could have just been helped. Somebody would have taken their time. Remember the first time that it ever happened to me, I felt like I could have been one of those people in the street if it wasn't for my family that was there for me, helping me along the way. So I call my doctor again because I need to be seen. I need to talk to somebody. I don't know what to do. I call my sisters. My sister says, call your doctor. I call my doctor. The doctor doesn't answer. I think it was Kaiser. And it says, if this is a psychiatric emergency, dial 911. So at that time, I was like, this is the common sense thing to do. So I hang up the phone, I dial 911, and the paramedics come, the ambulance, the police comes, and they're like, okay, we're gonna take you to the hospital. They're like, can you call anyone? My sisters are in high school, my other sister's in college, my partner's working. I just remember going to the ER, finally getting medication, and they're like, you're just depressed. Like, you're having a depressive episode. When I start talking about my childhood, growing up with an alcoholic parent, being the oldest, coming out, the rejection, my therapist finally said, hey, it's because you finally have time to process all these feelings inside you that you've never processed. It's all the suppressed emotions that you've never let out. Because up to 23, 24 years old, I had never been in a calm state, not waiting for my dad to blow, everything out of proportion and start screaming and yelling and walking up and down the house with a knife in his hand. Like, all these things that I, growing up, thought were normal were not. That was my first experience with mental health and going to see a psychiatrist and a therapist and getting medication and learning to process all these thoughts. But even then, for the anxiety attacks, they prescribed me Xanax. And my grandma, who also had anxiety, had dementia. And my mom would also, she also had Xanax. My mom also had Xanax. I just didn't know about this. But the way my mom would drink her Xanax is with beer. I know. You're rolling your eyes. I totally know. You should, because same. I didn't know when they gave me Xanax, they said, like, you just try not to drink. Okay. Do you drink? No, not really. Socially. Okay. Just try not to drink when you take these. Okay. So now I am a banker and I am on Xanax. My relationship is up and down. I dated this girl for 6 years. Eventually, she also cheated on me, which is completely okay. But the therapy, you go once a week and then you go once every 2 weeks and then you go once a month and then eventually you stop making the follow-up appointments and you just don't go because you get busy. Life is crazy. Other things are more important. Or now I found a solution. I just pop a Xanax, drink a beer, and I'm good. I go on my merry way. Eventually, your tolerance for these prescriptions goes up. So I was having a bad day. I had a fight with my girl at the time. I would go to work, take a Xanax or two. By the time work was done, I felt great. It's 6 o'clock. I'm feeling great. Let's go out. Let's have a drink. All my coworkers don't know I'm on Xanax. So they invite me out. I forget that I took one or two.
I start drinking and I start spiraling. I forget what I'm doing. I forget where I'm going. I forget who I'm with. I total the car. That was one of my first accidents because I have many. And now my relationship is horrible. This girl is lying and cheating, but telling me that I'm crazy, which I already think I'm crazy because I'm going to a therapist because I have an addiction cutting. So I start cutting. I always had a tendency of it, but it would manifest in different ways, such as tattoos or write Carf's names in my hand or pierce my ears. I had the gauges, and the bigger the gauge was, the more I would like it, like the feeling of the pain in my ears. So 23, 24, now I'm cutting. I finally am in a really, really bad place. I think I'm 24 because I'm still drinking. I'm still taking the antidepressants and sometimes Xanax to the point where I was taking 2 or 3 Xanax a day, going to bed and not waking up for a day or two. And then people wouldn't hear about me. I remember this day, it was so vividly, which is what made me want to get help. I hadn't been answering my phone. I had gotten in a fight with my partner at the time. I guess she called my sisters to come check on me. I didn't go to work. Somehow they were aware of my mental health. I'm in my room and my baby sister walks in and sees me and I'm bloody. It's very sorry, guys. I'm not going to be so graphic, but I'm bleeding and her face, the look in her face when she sees me and starts crying is what made me want to get help. A lot of the times when you are feeling like your life isn't worth it, and when you're in a depressive state, or when you're so clouded by all these thoughts and judgment in your own mind, we don't get help for ourselves. We get help for the people around us. We get help for the people that we love. That's exactly what I did. I looked at my sister's face and I said, never again. Never again will she catch me cutting myself. I remember that night my ex came and she said, you need help. I said, okay, take me. And I agreed to get help. I agreed to go to the clinic. And that was my first time being in an intake. I want to say I was there 2 weeks or slightly longer. But that was the first time I ever told myself that there has to be a better way. Like there's no way that this is my life. And I started looking up ways to improve, be better. Be a better. Christian music helped a lot. So when I first got out of there, the only thing I could listen to was Christian music. And when I got out of there, I wanted to move. Because in my mind, I thought, well, if I'm so bad, why this person who is making me feel crazy, making me think, seeing things and imagining things. And I mean, to a certain extent, I was a little off. But at the same time, when I would question her about, like, why are you spending so much with these people or these girls, she would make it seem like, oh, you're just jealous. They're just friends. Like, there's no big deal. So I now know that term is called gaslighting. She was gaslighting me. But she wouldn't let me leave. I mean, at the clinic, obviously, I went to therapy. I started doing the work. I started journaling. A little over 2 weeks later, I'm out. And they say, okay, well, things have to change. You have to change the current situation you're in. And, you know, if I am that crazy, let me go fix me. I remember telling my ex at the time, I'm like, look, obviously I'm not happy. You're telling me I'm making everything out of proportion and you're probably right. And so if I'm as crazy as you say, leave me alone. Let me go fix me. If we're meant to be, we will be. And I moved out. I remember moving to LA. I said, I need to get out of this little city that I'm in. I need to work on myself and I need to get better. So I did. I put a transfer in with work. When you make a decision, things happen quickly. And I love that about myself. That's something I didn't realize, but I do love that about myself. So I went back to work right after the 2 weeks of being in the clinic. I looked up transfers. I asked my boss, who I love him for this, because he knew that I needed to move. So he could tell I needed help. And I asked him, will you approve my transfer? I'm doing this to get help. And he did. I moved towards LA And out there, I started working on me. Within like 2 weeks of moving out, I was in Paramount. I was in a new city. I was living with my cousins. Remember my ex that kept saying it was all in my head? Well, 2 weeks after that, I find her cheating. I find that it wasn't in my head, that I was right the whole time, and that she is with this girl. So it was like, great. I'm not that crazy. But what did I do? I started drinking. That girl showed up in LA telling me it's not true. I'm like, I literally read the messages. Like, it's this, like, you can't deny it, but she still denied it. So it's funny. A huge thing broke out. I was going to cut. And my cousins and everybody got scared. They're like, do you want to go? I was drinking again. I was not okay. I just found out my girl's cheating. I wasn't crazy this whole time. I think the cops take her away. They take me back to the mental health clinic. They take me back, and I was like, okay, here's another break for myself. This time around, I decided that when I got out, I was going to stop drinking because obviously that was the common denominator a lot of the times in making everything so much worse. The elevation of the situation was heightened by the alcohol. And not being able to see things clearly was not helping. I did love her very much. I mean, I had just spent 6 years with her. Supposedly, we were trying to make it work. But then I found the messages of her cheating this whole time. I found the messages. She was cheating. She couldn't deny it anymore. I was heartbroken. And so I did need help for the second time. But after that, I got out, and that's when I found Tony Robbins' Love and Passion with Sage. And oh my God, that literally, like, that was my holy grail on how to overcome the relationship and find myself again. And Tony says this amazing thing: to have an extraordinary life, you have to have an extraordinary mindset. To have an extraordinary life, you need to have fulfillment. And so the best way to find your ideal partner and true love is by working on yourself. So there's nothing else you can do but work on your mind and work on yourself. He tells a story about a dad and a son, and they were in the Holocaust. He woke up every day. He would tell his son, live in your mind. Don't worry about what's going on around here. Go in your head and live there. And that's how they survived the Holocaust, because whatever was going around them, they would go in their head and be grateful for whatever they could and just survive there. And that's when I realized, Vanessa, you have a very weak mindset. My dad used to tell me that when I was younger, and I would get really offended and didn't understand what he meant. When I got out of there, I was like, well, if I have a weak mindset, let me find people with strong minds. How do I reprogram my brain? How do I unlearn all the things that I was taught? Like, here's your sundaes and a beer, mija. Like, that's good for you. How do I do that? And I'm not saying anything bad about my mom. I love my mother. She's done miracles in my life. But she's always tried to help the best way she knew how to. And so she also stopped taking the medication like that, because we realized that that's not the way you should be taking it. Now Xanax is a lot harder to get, but back in the day, it was super simple. I had bottles and bottles just laying around. I would pop them like Tic Tacs. But the second time, I was in a psychiatric ward, and the first night, because it was late at night, and the way they brought me in, it put me in like needs lots of help wing. And I was scared. I was so scared. I don't think I slept that night. I remember telling the lady in the early morning that following day, how do I get in that other wing, like the chill wing, the wing where like you're not that. And she's like, you have to do work. I'm like, what? Like, go to clinic. They have clinics where you come and you sit in therapy and you show up. Because when I was in there, I was just laying in bed, not wanting to do anything. And she's like, you've got to go to clinic. You want to get better? You got to get up. You got to do the work. Everyone says you got to do the work, to process the things. You have to talk about them. You have to let it out. Normally, they just do a 72-hour hold. However, they recommended I stay a little longer. I believe I'd only stayed a week there this time around. And once again, got out and I went to work on me. I remember I didn't drink. I found Herbalife, which it's funny because Tony Robbins led me to Herbalife, but Herbalife led me to Jim Rohn. And Jim Rohn is Tony Robbins' mentor and coach. which was so cool for me to find out after. If you don't know who I'm talking about, Tony Robbins, you should know. But Jim Rohn was his mentor back in the day, and he was also the personal development speaker for Herbalife. And Herbalife is how I lost a lot of weight. I love Herbalife. I still take it. One of the best companies and best people I've ever gotten a chance to work with. It saved my life. I didn't become a president's team or anything, but it saved my life nonetheless because it taught me how to love myself. It taught me personal development, taught me how to be active and get out of my head. Hiking saved my life, and Herbalife led me to hiking. People say they don't want to take medication, and there's so many different studies and so many different things, but some people say they don't work at all. Some people say they do work. I noticed me myself personally. It does help me. It helps bring me to a normal state. Like if I'm very depressed, the medication helps bring me to a normal state so that I could, from here, make better decisions. Most importantly, what truly, truly helped me is learning how to eat better, being active, going outside, hiking, walking, getting out in the world. I cannot stress that enough. And this is why I say Herbalife saved my life, because I discovered how to cope with my depression, with my anxiety. I had to, if I wanted a better life for myself. I tried it the first time. I didn't do a very good job. Here you go, Vanessa. Here's a second time. You get to do it again. And this time, I made it more of a point. Granted, I didn't do such a good job at the beginning, but you just keep doing it. You keep doing it and you keep doing it because nothing's going to be easy at the beginning. Things don't get easier. You just get better at them. This is from Jim Rohn right here. Things don't get easier. You get better. And at the beginning, nothing is easy. If it was easy, everybody would do it. But you have to choose to be different and choose that for yourself and for your life. So I started to go on walks. At first, I couldn't run. I was like 175 pounds. I'm 5'2", so you can notice that very quickly. I started going on walks. I started drinking my shakes. I started to go to the workout camps. And obviously, guess what happens when you don't drink and you wake up early and go on a hike? When you drink your water, you feel better. I also heard another person say that I've never met anyone who works out, eats clean, gets enough sleep that is depressed. Doesn't happen. Because fitness really is the pill that does it all. If you could bottle fitness, like being active, working out, and put it in a little bottle, it would cure almost everything in the world. Depression, anxiety, diabetes, and it makes you lose weight and look good and feel amazing because of the endorphins. So, once again, working on myself. I didn't go try to find a partner. I didn't go try to find the next girlfriend. I went to work on myself. The things that'll make you the strongest are the hardest things that you're gonna have to live with, and you're gonna have to do them on your own. No one's gonna come save you. No one's gonna do it for you. So I started working out. I started journaling. I started doing the affirmations, but I did them from a place of when I was running. I stole this one from Tony Robbins. Success leaves clues. If you see someone that has done something or achieved something that you want, just figure out how they did it and copy them. Nothing wrong with that. Tony Robbins would say that he would go on walks and he would say out loud, every day and every way, I'm getting stronger and stronger. And I was in a place where I felt defeated. I was overweight. I wasn't strong physically, mentally, or emotionally. So what did I do? I started going on walks and started saying, every day and every way, I'm getting stronger and stronger. Every day and every way, I'm getting stronger and stronger. And I would walk at first, started jogging, then running up hills and hiking. And then I fell in love with it. I fell in love with the process. I fell in love with how it made me feel. By then, I was 25. Finally, in a better place where I started to love myself. I moved back to the desert, still working at the bank, just doing so many things for me, what made me happy. At the same time, took me a long time, maybe like 2 years of not really drinking, just working on myself. I lost the weight. I felt better. Didn't date anybody for quite some time.
I felt better, started doing everything, and then I got off my medication. This is why I say that. For some people, medication how works, some people it doesn't. You just have to find what is right for you, what works for you. Because I was doing so well by myself, my doctor took me off the medication. And that was something I discussed with my doctor little by little, but I continued to be active. Being active 100% made the difference. When I caught myself not being active and saw myself drinking too much or falling back in those old patterns and habits, it's when I would automatically see my state, my mental state change completely. So I knew, once again, being aware of where I've been and where I want to go in life helped me see, okay, Vanessa, you need to stop. I can call myself out on these things. Eventually, I met my partner of 10 years, which is my ex-wife, and had an amazing relationship with her. But always working out, always being active. I would have never been able to meet or attract someone like her if it wasn't because of all the work that I did on myself from day one. And I continue to do. Sometimes you wake up and you still feel depressed. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Like, if I don't take my medication 1 or 2 days, I feel the difference. Or if I don't go to the gym for 2, 3 days in a row, I feel the anxiety creeping in. I can feel it in my bones and my skin. It's something that it's never going to go away, but it's something that I know how to, that I've developed habits and patterns to overcome. So I noticed I didn't go to the gym in 2 days, 3 days. Gotta go. Sorry, guys. I love you very much, but I gotta go work out. Mom, can you take care of the baby? Back in the day, it would be like, she would even say, go for a run. Like, just go work out because you could see it. The anxiety comes out, the negative thoughts that creep in. Unfortunately, it's something that maybe I'll have for the rest of my life. But the fact that I know that I wake up and I say, thank you, God, for this amazing day. Today's gonna be the best day ever. Today's gonna be an amazing day. Move around, walk around, up and down, move your body because your physical state is gonna affect your mental state. And your mental state's gonna affect your emotions. When I don't feel the greatest, I get up. Thank you, God. Gratitude is the first thing that I think of. I'm grateful for my life. I'm grateful for my health, my family's health, my son's health. And I start to say 4 or 5 things that I'm grateful for. Then I start to move around. Then I stand up straight. If I can scream on myself, I'll scream. If I can sing, I'll sing. I used to also listen to a lot of sad music. I realized that that's not very helpful, right? I remember thinking like all I could listen to was Christian music. If I listened to anything else, I felt the weight of the music on top of me and I would start crying. Little by little, it gets better though. Eventually, I can listen to one good song and then I would go back to the Christian music, or I could listen to two good songs and I'd go back to the Christian music. Things don't get easier. You become better. You become stronger mentally, emotionally, physically. I remember adding that to my mantra when I would wake up, when I would go on a run, when I would go on a hike. And you don't have to say it out loud, just say it to yourself. I've been doing this since I was 25, over 10 years. And I still do it. I still write it down. I remember, well, when I was trying to get pregnant, I wrote it down. I write when I want, how I want to feel, whether it's manifesting it or speaking it into existence. The more I do, the more it helps me. I remember I was trying to get pregnant and I wrote, I'm so grateful and thankful now that I'm pregnant and I have a healthy pregnancy. My baby's growing so beautifully. I love being pregnant. I love the experience and I'm so grateful that I have such a healthy pregnancy. And I can remember writing this little paragraph of how I felt. And my ex found it. She comes up to me. She's like, you're pregnant? I was like, what? She's like, what is this? She brings the paper and she's like, I didn't know you were pregnant. I was like, no, it's my journaling. You're like, you know, just leave it alone. I'm like hiding it from her. These things that you do to make yourself feel better, you don't have to take medication if you don't want to. But in my case, I found that it does help, especially when there's major things going on in your life, like a breakup. That is definitely one of the reasons why some people may, you know, take it periodically. I mean, obviously, talk to your doctor, but I don't see anything wrong with it. And I want kids and everyone else to understand that it's okay to ask for help. asking for help is telling someone that you find value in them. And it's flattering. If I go up to my boss and I say, "Hi, teach me how to do this. I need your help with this." It's because I'm acknowledging that you have something to give. So don't take that from people by not asking for help. Give them the blessing of being valuable.
With that being said, I want to leave you with some action steps that you can take, that you can share with your loved ones, anyone that may be suffering with depression, anxiety, or just, is in a funk. Because all of these help. You can do them every day, once a day, or as needed. I love to start my mornings with gratitude. Before I even get out of bed, the moment I wake up, open my eyes. This was also not always easy for me, but just keep in mind that the more you do it, the easier it gets. Within the first minute of being awake and realizing that it's a brand new day, I would just say, "Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, God. Thank you, universe. Thank you," out loud. Because I opened my eyes. That alone is a blessing, and it's a beautiful one. Yes, sometimes as soon as you do that, thoughts and list of things that you have to do will creep in. But I find that the more I practice gratitude, before I was able to hold it for like a second, some days I wasn't able to hold it at all. Now I can literally lay there for a good 5 minutes just going through things that I'm grateful for. Waking up next to my son helps because I can just say, "I am so grateful that I have this little tiny in my life next to me. I'm thankful for my health, my son's health, my family's health. I'm thankful for this bed. It could be something else. I'm thankful for the shower I'm about to take. If I'm about to have a workout, I'm thankful for a workout. It doesn't have to be anything crazy. Simply, I'm thankful for my food, my dogs. I believe one day I had been having a really bad allergy or allergic reaction to my skin. I woke up that day thinking, "I'm grateful that I have medicine for this. Now my skin is cleared and I am so grateful that I am okay." Things like that. Whatever you're grateful for, try to add something new every other day and switch it up, change it up. Another thing that has helped me tremendously to overcome my depression and my anxiety is to, people say touch grass, but just anything out in nature is extremely therapeutic. And it's scientifically proven that nature, sun, vitamin D will increase your happy chemistry in your brain. The sun is amazing vitamin D. A lot of people villainize the sun. I, for example, for a while was like, "Oh my God, I can't be in the sun too much." But I love the sun. Yo soy morenita. And keep in mind also that the more darker skin you are, the more sun you'll need. For us ladies that don't want any sun in our face, perfect, wear sunblock in your face. But try to get some on your feet, on your stomach, on your arms. Get out, go for a walk. Get up and get out. A lot of the time, depression will sneak in because you don't leave your house or because you're just indoors, and then you start to feel more tired, and then you eventually you're like, "What's the point in going out?" I'm guilty of this. I had this for a while. I wouldn't leave my house, especially during COVID. But now I make it a point to set an alarm, take my son out, go for a walk, even if it's a 10-minute walk, or just go to the mailbox, throw the trash away. Anything will help. It's going to get your body in motion, and remember that a body in motion stays in motion. Another thing I love to do is journaling. I love to envision things as if they already happened, kind of like a gratitude list. In the morning, you can either write it down, think of it, speak it out loud, or just think about it in your head. Let yourself get excited of possibilities. For example, like, how cool would it be if today someone bought me coffee? Something as little as that. That's what I started with when I first started to learn how to practice manifestation or how to bring thoughts into my mind and hold them. And I started with, imagine if someone got me coffee. I just thought about this story. I'm gonna tell you. So I was working in Paramount at the time. I had just been released from the mental health clinic after my 5150 hold that lasted over a week. And I had probably been a month since then that I started to think, well, I need to work on my mindset. I need to work on manifesting and being healthier, you know, just working on my mindset. And I had remembered, I had watched The Secret. And after leaving the second hospital, it popped in my head. And I was like, let me rewatch this. Dr. Bedwick, he was one of the first people in the movie The Secret, and he was talking about manifestation. Dr. Bedwick, or yeah, I believe that's his name. But another guy in the movie would mention how he loved to do this thing with parking. He would close his eyes and envision a parking right where he wanted by the store. Let's say he was going to Macy's, and he would close his eyes and envision a parking right by the entrance or right by a tree, wherever he wanted. On the way there, he would just think of it over and over and over. And as soon as he got there, he noticed that there was always a parking. And sometimes he said, I might have to like wait a little bit or drive around once. But as soon as I turned the corner, someone was leaving. But the front parking, the one he wanted. And it was really cool to see like, oh my God, it works. These are little ways for you to start practicing it. Another guy mentioned that he wanted a cup of coffee. He's like, someone's going to give me a cup of coffee today. He said he went to work, and so he got there, and someone's like, hey, I got your coffee. And he was just like, oh my God, this is so awesome. It works. I didn't think I could do the parking one at the time, but I was like, I can do the coffee one. Because I work at a bank. Everyone's always buying coffee for everybody. I'm like, I can do this one. And the first time I was like, someone's going to give me coffee. Someone's going to give me coffee. And the morning went by, and no one got me coffee. I was like, it's okay. I'll try again tomorrow. You know, and the whole day I kept thinking, someone's going to give me coffee tomorrow. Someone's going to give me coffee tomorrow. Like, I didn't give up. I was like, you know what? I maybe need a little more practice, but it's going to work. It's going to work. And it was around 4 o'clock in the afternoon. I had a customer. At the time, I was a banker. The customer comes over. She asked me, hey, do you like coffee? And I said, yeah, I do. She's like, oh, well, I work for this coffee shop, but I don't really like coffee. So they always give us free coffee coupons. Do you want them? And I was like, oh my God. Yes. I'm like, oh, I would love it. She gave me like 5 free coffee coupons for the coffee shop that was right next door to us. And I laughed so hard because I was like, oh my goodness, this works. Not only did I not get my cup of coffee in the morning, or I didn't get it in an actual coffee, I got the coffee through coupons. So the universe is always listening. God is always listening. And don't get discouraged if you don't see it the way you thought you were going to get it. Kind of like, you're going to get it. If it's for you, it's always going to be for you. If you want it, it's going to come. It might just come in unexpected ways. And that was where I got hooked on practicing little manifestations like that. From there, I had a week worth of coffee. I didn't feel bad. I didn't say, oh, this doesn't work. When that morning I didn't get my coffee, I was like, well, I hear that then all it happens and some people need a little more practice than others. And you know what? I'll work tomorrow morning. And it didn't even have to take that long because by 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I had 5 coffees. That's another thing. You know, practice it. Don't give up. Don't feel discouraged. Try to hold it in your mind as long as possible. I would say talk about it, you know, say it out loud. But honestly, sometimes that backfires depending on who I'm talking with. So I kind of rather just write it in my journal. I rather just journal what I'm grateful for, what I want, and what I'm looking forward to. I take 10 minutes of the day journaling. I am grateful for my friend, my family, being alive, this house. I spend 2 or 3 minutes on that. Then I spend another 2 or 3 minutes on what I'm looking forward to. And then finally at the end, I write it like if it already happened. Like, I'm so grateful that I have this beautiful, healthy baby kind of story that I just write it down. So yeah, the first one is what I'm grateful for. The second one is send love. Love my, like, thank you, God. Please protect my sisters, my mother. I love them. My aunt in Mexico, my cousin in Mexico. I might not talk to them every day, but I send them love. And then finally, I write what I'm looking forward to and write it in a sense where I am so thankful that I have a beautiful, amazing podcast. I am so grateful for all the people that are here supporting me and listening to my podcast. I'm so grateful that my podcast is reaching so many other women and helping them in different ways. That is one of my most recent entries. We got gratitude, getting your body to move, whether it's working out, going for a walk, getting some sun, journaling, speaking it out loud. I really, really like journaling because there's something about putting a pen to paper that does something to your brain chemistry that makes it easier to manifest. And then the last one, which is super easy to do, but also super hard because it's so easy that people don't do it, which is drink your water, eat healthy. The what you put in your body matters. And I'm not saying it in a sense of to be skinny or you have to be a certain size. No, it has nothing to do with that. It has to do with feeding your soul, feeding your cells of your body, drinking your water, detoxing from all the stuff. There's a direct correlation between drinking water, feeling better, or drinking alcohol, going out, staying up late, and feeling like shit the next day. If you love your body, if you want to live longer, then don't fight against it. Feeding it junk every single day. Feeding it toxins every single day. I am definitely guilty of liking my martinis and liking my old fashions and loving a good margarita. Like, I love beer. That is a known fact. I love to drink. But I also know that that hurts my body, and I can definitely see an effect of mood change when I do it. So cut back. It's not that hard. I still enjoy a cocktail at dinner. But let's say I do it once a week, not every single day, as I used to. Opt for good quality tequila, good quality vodka. That also has a big effect in your body. So I'm not saying don't do it. But if you cannot handle it, don't do it. If you know yourself, watch what happens when you do it and see. Ask yourself, do I feel good doing it? If you do, perfect. If you don't, change it. Because the only person that can control you, your mind, and your life is yourself. Thank you so much for listening, guys. Can't believe we are done with another episode. Protect your mental health. Protect the people around you. Check on them. Get off your phones. Try to get off your phones. And continue to spread love. Educate yourself. Don't believe everything you read. Don't believe everything. Don't even believe me. Do your own research. Think for yourself. Because they do. They grow. They evolve. They're different. And remember, unicorns do exist. You're listening to one. Bye.